From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show this week are Barbara Slavin, Acting Director of the Future of Iran Initiative at the Atlantic Council and Washington correspondent for Al Monitor, and Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor. And here are the issues. President-elect Donald Trump focused on filling the top positions in his cabinet and in national security areas. Meanwhile, Democrats regrouped by choosing Senator Chuck Schumer of New York as their leader in the Senate, while House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi faced a challenge from Ohio Congressman Tim Ryan. And the president-elect began meeting with foreign leaders. Linda, I'll start with you. What are you moving to what has been now? It's been a little more than a week since Donald Trump was elected president. What do you make of his transition efforts?
Well, it's been described by some reporters as chaotic, but we're already seeing at least his national security structure take place. With Mike Flynn as national security advisor, I think that's the most important appointment so far.
And who is he?
Mike Flynn is a former three-star general, was the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, had a falling out with the Obama administration and left his job and became very vocal warner against radical Islam. He was upset that Barack Obama wouldn't say the words radical Islam, and then he became a real rabble-rouser at the Republican convention and was leading chants of lock her up about Hillary Clinton.
What does a national security advisor do? I mean, that's not the same as Secretary of State.
That's right. So that's arguably more important than Secretary of State. The Secretary of State is traveling the world and is in a separate building. The National Security Advisor is right there with the president, talking to him, whispering in his ear, really shaping the overall strategy on foreign policy and security policy.
Yeah, Barbara, what's your take on this, the beginnings of this transition toward a Trump presidency?
Well, I have to say I'm not very impressed with a lot of the names that have been floated or the individuals that have been chosen. Mike Flynn has a particularly disturbing history. He was fired by the Obama administration. He is an Islamophobic individual. He has basically condemned the Muslim religion rather than simply those who perpetuate terrorism. I was saying before the show that he tweeted a video on his Twitter account that asserts that Muslims are trying to enslave 80% of the world or exterminate them. And he has other troubling qualities as well. He has lobbied for the Turkish government. He accepted intelligence briefings while he was working on the Trump campaign. At the same time, his company, which he set up after he was fired, was representing a very prominent Turkish businessman. On the day of the election, he had an op-ed published calling for the extradition of Fethullah Gulen, the Turkish spiritual leader who's in the United States, who has been accused of engineering a coup attempt against the president of Turkey, which has not been proven. So I think he has a lot of troubling elements in his background, and I'm very worried that he's going to reinforce the worst instincts and inaccurate interpretations of Donald Trump.
What about the transition in general? It's really focused on, I mean, the big four jobs in the cabinet are the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, Attorney General, and the Treasury Secretary. But it seems the more foreign policy-oriented ones are that they're focusing on, as they did with Mike Flynn.
Well,
more
look,
broadly,
I hope that someone more mainstream and tempered is brought in as Secretary of State. There were some rumors he might even ask Mitt Romney, the former presidential candidate, to be his Secretary of State. But I find it very hard to see Mitt Romney in a Trump cabinet.
Mitt Romney, of course, the Republican presidential nominee in 2012, was the leader of, probably the national leader of the Never Trump movement.
Of the Never Trump movement. So that would be an extraordinary, you know, team of rivals if he could be induced to come in. It would be reassuring. But, you know, some of the other names that have been out there, I mean, fortunately, some of the trial balloons have been shot down. Rudy Giuliani hopefully will not be Secretary of State. John Bolton will hopefully not be Secretary of State. These are individuals who also have very problematic backgrounds, in my view.
Is there anyone you like?
Among the people that he's chosen so far, I mean, the only one who provides any comfort, I suppose, is Rance Priebus as his chief of staff. But, of course, he accompanied that announcement with the selection of Steve Bannon, the head of Breitbart News, to be a top advisor in the White House. And Steve Bannon also has a very ugly history of Islamophobic, misogynistic, racist, and anti-Semitic attitudes.
I have a feeling that Steve Bannon, B-A-N-N-O-N, didn't ever hear that advice from Henry Kissinger, who said, I think I'll try to paraphrase it, the idea being that never take a job in government that doesn't have an inbox.
Mm.
And if you have an inbox, you're going to get a lot to do. And if you're just some counselor, you're not called on very much and really don't have that much influence usually.
Well, I think, Linda? So job titles are important, but they're not everything. I see Steve Bannon as a gadfly, as somebody who obviously Donald Trump respects and he appreciates his counsel. And Donald Trump listens to a lot of people, and sometimes it's said that he just absorbs the last opinion he's heard and then goes with that. So I think the jury is still out as to how this will all play out. And I actually am trying not to come to firm conclusions about what all this means. I think we have to give all of these people a chance to show what they're really going to do. I mean, it may be a very hard right, super anti-Islamic administration, but let's let them take office and see what actually plays out.
Yeah, what about the Defense Department, though? There have been some names. I'm trying to think of the names. A
few generals have mentioned.
A few generals, which are difficult because if you haven't been retired from the military for a certain amount of years, you have to get a waiver, which is not automatic. If you're retired from the military and become defense secretary, it's normally a civilian.
Right, and I think this really shows sort of the direction that Donald Trump is going in. I mean, he's promised a crackdown on illegal immigration and illegal immigrants. He's still talking about securing the border and, you know, the sort of the militarization of the Trump administration shows a certain direction.
That this, law and order.
Law and order. I mean, he's Donald Trump has to deliver. He has set very high expectations for his presidency. A lot of people voted for him, not a majority, but a lot, many millions, and he's promised to make America great again. And I think the question to me is, how much time does he have? He doesn't have 4 years. Does he even have two? He may have just 1 year to really impress his followers and feel a tangible difference in their lives and their sense of security and economic possibility.
Normally, in your first year, you have a much better chance of getting legislation that you want passed and so on. After that, it gets a lot more difficult. No question about that. Yeah, Barbara, there's been criticism of the so-called transition, and there's a transition office that Donald Trump has on Fifth Avenue in New York in the Trump Tower where his office is, and I think he lives there too, actually. But in any case, it's been described as chaotic and in disarray. My view is that these transitions are always somewhat chaotic. People are coming and going, and you're considering all these people, and people are coming in and applying for jobs and so on, that's par for the course.
Well, there have been some differences here. I mean, he actually had a transition operation going under New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and then as soon as he was elected, he dumped Chris Christie and brought Vice President-elect Mike Pence in to run it, and a lot of the work that had been done by Christie was thrown away. You know, some of the very sensible people like Mike Rogers, a congressman who's an intelligence expert, was sort of cast aside. They didn't do the paperwork required to actually go into the various government branches and begin the formal transition process of getting briefings.
Surely you're not going to attack them for the lack of proper paperwork.
Well, you know, Trump is meeting already with very important foreign leaders like the Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe, without the benefit of seeing any documentation on what the current state of U.S.-Japan relations are. He's talking on the phone with Vladimir Putin without ever having had been briefed, not just about what we know about Russian activities in the world, but about some of the more covert things that have been going on. So, you know, it's a little worrisome that he may be already making decisions as president-elect that don't reflect any knowledge of what's really going on between the United States and these countries. So, yeah, the first days look very chaotic. Now the transition is sort of settling in. It will take a long time. I mean, there are 4,000 political jobs to be filled. It will take probably well over a year to get down to the level of assistant secretaries and deputy assistant secretaries. And the burden is going to fall on the career government employees to keep the machinery, you know, going while this process plays out.
Well, they've done that before.
They have done that before. Mm-hmm. My hope is that enough of them will stay mm-hmm. and that we won't see a lot of early resignations and retirements as people see who the heads of these various cabinet departments are going to be. I mean, Jeff Sessions has been, you know, discussed now for Attorney General, mm-hmm. and this is someone who was rejected in a nomination for a federal district court judgeship in 1986 because of racist remarks. So if you're working in the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department, are you going to hang around and wait for Jeff Sessions?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. What about Jeff Sessions, who's a senator from Alabama?
Very, very loyal to Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. He was in the Senate. He was Donald Trump's man, and he could have the pick of whatever mm-hmm. he wanted in the Trump administration.
What about loyalty as grounds for picking someone? I don't find it unusual. Anyway, what do you think about that?
Well, this is what Donald Trump is all about. Mm-hmm. I mean, he keeps lists of enemies. If you mm-hmm. slight him, he remembers that. Therefore, I find it interesting that he's meeting with Mitt Romney this weekend, mm-hmm. the ultimate never-Trumper. Mm-hmm. He has already met with Ted Cruz, mm-hmm. otherwise known as Lion Ted, the senator who mm-hmm. Opposed him in the primaries, mm-hmm. and the two were initially allies and then became mortal enemies mm-hmm. until Trump won the nomination. So I think it will be very interesting to see if Trump does ultimately build any kind of team of rivals administration, where if he allows mm-hmm. any of his former mm-hmm. so-called enemies mm-hmm. into his midst. Mm-hmm. Maybe he puts Ted Cruz on the Supreme Court. That's another possibility.
Yes, people in the Senate would like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So that, you know.
Yeah, mainly the Republicans.
There's a lot he can do, and he can, if Trump even cares about an appearance mm-hmm. of diversity within his administration, mm-hmm. i.e. friends mm-hmm. and not-so-good friends, he can put people in high-profile positions and then not pay attention to them and not listen yeah. to them.
Well, I got to say, I mean, you know, Obama has a cabinet that looks like America.
Right.
Trump looks like he's going to have a cabinet that looks like America circa 1960.
Although he is working really hard to find women to put in there with him. You know, Fran Townsend is a possibility for Homeland Security. Hearing they might find something for Kelly Ayotte, perhaps UN ambassador. She's the senator from New Hampshire who lost re-election.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But he does have to put women in there. He's really under the gun on that issue.
I think he probably will. We'll see when he gets there. Let's talk about Democrats for a minute. Chuck Schumer, we've known for a long time, would be the next Democratic leader in the Senate after Harry Reid of Nevada was retiring. There's some interesting aspects to Chuck Schumer. He has known Donald Trump probably longer than most anybody in Washington. And Trump is obviously dealing with the House Speaker Paul Ryan and the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, but it's Schumer who he knows best. Barbara, what does that lead to?
Well, you know, it's like what they used to call the subway series. I mean, it's, you know, Brooklyn and Queens. They're from two boroughs, not from Manhattan in terms of their upbringing. There, I mean, if Trump goes through with his promises to do a big infrastructure spending mm-hmm. bill, I think he can find common ground mm-hmm. With Schumer and with the Democrats, because that's something that Hillary Clinton would have done, too. A more interesting case will be on some of these nominations. I mean, Jeff Sessions will probably get through because he's a sitting senator, and, you know, and one would think that his Senate colleagues will let him go through. We'll have to see who the other names are that come forward. You know, who will the Democrats choose to fight? They let things go through. But, you know, we're talking about the government employees who will keep things ticking along. We do have other checks and balances, and the Senate Democrats, there'll be at least 48 of them. There will be Republicans who've already expressed some concern about Trump policies. People like Rand Paul mm-hmm. and like Lindsey Graham and Jeff Flake and others who are not so thrilled with the love fest that Trump has going with Putin. So we will have some institutional backstops against some of Trump's policies.
We'll have more in just a minute. First, a reminder that you're listening to Issues in the News, coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show today are Linda Feldman of the Christian Science Monitor and Barbara Slavin of Al Monitor. And this is a reminder that you can listen to Issues online as a podcast. The program is also available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. What about the Democrats, Linda, and particularly The Democrats are older, actually, in Congress anyway. And Nancy Pelosi, who's been the leader of House Democrats for, well, more than a decade, I think, mm-hmm. is now challenged by Tim Ryan, a younger mm-hmm. House member from Ohio. I think the conventional wisdom is that Nancy Pelosi will be reelected as the leader of Democrats in the House, but the challenge is important.
Right. The outcome of this election, in which the Democrats lost everything, has exposed a hollowness in the party that it is now coming to grips with. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, it's the Democratic Party that's in crisis. Mm-hmm. I mean, it already kind of was, but we mm-hmm. didn't see it because we had mm-hmm. Barack Obama at the top. Mm-hmm. Now, the most prominent figures in the party are old. I mean, you had mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton, you had Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders. We just had breakfast with him. He's not a Democrat, mm-hmm. but he is very much in the middle of efforts to save and revive the Democratic Party. He's been brought into the leadership in the Senate. He's the outreach chairman. He understands better than anybody, as one who also had populist appeal during the primaries, as did Donald Trump, that there are people out there who are hurting and need to be reached, white working class people. The question is, how do you reach them when you don't have any hand on power in Washington?
You know, one of the things I've always noticed is when parties are seen, you know, there'll be stories written about them and they're in terrible trouble and will they ever recover and all these things. And then they recover usually pretty quickly. I mean, it happened with the Republicans after President Obama won in 2008 and they were in terrible shape. Then they had a strong recovery and took back the House of Representatives 2 years later.
Right. And I think there's a big danger that the Republicans overreach.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Donald Trump did not win the popular vote. So the numbers are up closer to a million, I think, a million more votes for Hillary than for Donald Trump. Their margin in the Senate is close. Now, the House, still a big margin. Mm-hmm. But the Republicans, if they just overdo it and go really hardcore on, you know, anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim, anti-climate change.
Anti-healthcare.
Anti-healthcare. I mean, the list is long. Anti-women, anti-reproductive rights. Mm-hmm. You are going to have a revolt on your hands. Millennials voted for Hillary Clinton a big way, and they are watching. They're protesting. Mm-hmm. The Republicans are on notice. They can't just run mm-hmm. roughshod mm-hmm. with everything they want to do.
I wouldn't say the Republicans are anti-healthcare. They oppose President Obama's Affordable Care Act, his health insurance plan. But anyway, what about these protests, Barbara? They're more than I think were expected. I wouldn't call them sporadic. They're a little more than sporadic. And how should we interpret these?
Yeah. This is my bright spot. Mm-hmm. And you know, in addition to the sort of institutional checks we have on overreach by a president, I think we are seeing something that we haven't seen since the late 1960s, which is the reemergence of a massive protest movement on many levels. And as someone who cut her teeth on anti-Vietnam War protest demonstrations in the 1960s and the 1970s, as a young person, I see the same thing really happening again, but over different issues. This time it will be over immigration, it will be over health care, it will be over tolerance toward others and women's rights, etc. There is a huge march planned for January the 21st, a women's march, the Million Women's March, I think it's called. And I already have friends from around the country asking if they can come and stay, and they all want to come and demonstrate. I think we will see the sorts of constant protests and ferment on college campuses and in the cities of the United States that we haven't seen since the 1960s. And this will keep Trump on notice that many people in the country did not vote for him, and that he cannot simply throw out the legacy of 8 years of Obama and all the progress that we've made over the last four decades in terms of women's rights and civil rights.
What has he said he would throw out? I can't.
He's going to appoint someone to the Supreme Court who does not believe that women have a right to abortion. I mean, he has said many things, apart from his private comments, which were caught on tape, that show a complete lack of respect for women. He has said many, many things in his speeches that suggest an agenda that would restrict the rights of women, restrict the rights of minorities. He's talking about throwing out 2 to 3 million undocumented immigrants. There, the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, this is another positive thing, got more contributions after the election than it has in such a time period ever. So civil society is going to fight back in numerous ways and will be a check on his ambitions.
Well, this group of people you're talking about, the liberals and the political left wing, they did lose the election, which is more important,
yes,
I think.
But they will fight back now.
But I'd like to suggest another potential bright spot in our future. Amidst a lot of fear among about half of the country that didn't support Donald Trump, and that is that Donald Trump is not an ideologue. He's a businessman. He has a book out that he didn't write himself, but The Art of the Deal. He's a deal maker. He's a pragmatist. Now, he's going to give a lot to the conservatives who elected him. So they'll get, I think, a very conservative Supreme Court justice. But I think Democrats and the protesters can't assume the worst about everything that Donald Trump is going to do. And I think everybody needs to keep an open mind that about the ability to work with him and to somehow convince him that it makes sense to give the Democrats something and to sort of promote social cohesion in this country and, you know, and to find some, and there is common ground on some issues, as you pointed out. You know, and Donald Trump doesn't want to cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. That's, you know, that's a start. I mean, there are Republicans
Paul
who
Ryan does
cut all those programs, but Donald Trump, as I said, is not an ideologue. He's not, I mean, if Donald Trump were impeached, as some Democrats already want, they would get Mike Pence. And I think Democrats would be more unhappy with Mike Pence than with Donald Trump.
He isn't even president yet.
I know, right?
How can you talk about impeaching him?
Well, they were, you know, they're already talking about locking Hillary up if she won the election before she was to take office. No, I think this is going to be a very...
Who is they? That's something that Donald Trump said in the debate.
His people. This is going to be a very...
I haven't seen anybody say that. We want to lock up Hillary Clinton. Who has said that?
Mike Flynn.
He wants to lock up Hillary?
Yeah. Look, this is going to be a very wild ride, and we don't know what Donald Trump's going to do. Donald Trump doesn't know what he's going to do. We haven't mentioned his children, who are taking very prominent roles in his transition, and according to some reports, his son-in-law even wants to serve in the administration, which would be illegal, according to my understanding of a 1967 law. This is going to be a wild ride, and yeah, we have to hope for the best, but we have to prepare for the worst. And the worst could be very bad indeed.
You think so, Linda?
I think we have to. I mean, we're right on a knife's edge here. We've got young people walking out of school and jumping up and down, and older people, too. I mean, you've got a lot of the sort of the 60s anti-Vietnam people, you know, they're out there with the young people. But I think people need to take practical steps. I don't think, and I actually kind of have a problem with these protests, protesting a free and fair election. As far as we know, the election wasn't rigged.
Except by the Russians who hacked emails.
Donald Trump won, and I think people need to respect that. And he's an outside-the-box person, outside-the-box president. We don't know what's going to happen. If we are just freaking out and adamantly opposed to Donald Trump from day one, then that, I think, precludes the possibility of some positive things happening.
Well, I think there are certain breaks on B-R-A-K-E-S, on Donald Trump. And one, of course, is Democrats have 48 senators. It's very close there. The filibuster, which allows them to block the legislation and appointments if Republicans can't muster 60 votes, and they only have 52 at the moment, means that Donald Trump's not going to have a full free hand, as most presidents don't.
And that is good.
Don't you think that's safe to say?
Absolutely. Before the election, a French reporter, friend of mine, predicted that Trump would win, by the way. And they're very worried in Europe that this will lead to the election of Marine Le Pen, actually, in France. But she, trying to calm Americans down who are afraid of Donald Trump and saying that we have the strongest system of checks and balances in the world, and there's no way that Donald Trump can become a dictator. So.
Well, that's certainly my view, and we've seen him now begin something that I think is probably the most important thing that he needs to do right now, and that's reassure America's allies that, for instance, if they're members of NATO, and rather than how much they pay for NATO, that's not a condition for the American president backing them in case they're invaded or something. But anyway, I'm sure we'll be talking about that in coming weeks, and that's all the time we have, at least today. Joining us were Barbara Slavin, acting director of the Future of Iran Initiative at the Atlantic Council and Washington correspondent for Al Monitor, and Linda Feldman, Washington bureau chief for the Christian Science Monitor. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineers are Justin Thwaites and Linus Rimkus. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Thank you for listening.